The Athletic.
Welcome to Why Always Us. This is your Manchester City podcast from The Athletic. I'm David Mooney. I'm joined by The Athletic City correspondent Sam Lee. Hi, Sam.
Hiya.
Right now, you can subscribe to The Athletic for a special price of £3.99 per month for 6 months. That's 40% off the full price of a subscription. You'll enjoy great analysis and in-depth features from the very best football writers around, as well as ad-free versions of all the podcasts as well. So just go to theathletic.com/mancitypod to take advantage of this special 40% discount. That's theathletic.com/mancitypod. And if you're enjoying the show, please leave us a review as well. Couple of bits of housekeeping to start with, I think, this week, Sam. The big news as we start this week is that there is a massive row ongoing between City and Opta.
A huge row. I mean, it's not like a huge row, but I think City have made their case to Opta that wins via penalty shootout should count in official statistics. And I mean, people feel really strongly about this.
I know. I feel really strongly that they shouldn't. I don't fall down on City's side on this.
But I mean, if anything, I think they should. Like, and for me, it's just as simple as, well, the game went to penalties and they won. I know the game finished as a draw technically, but no, the game didn't finish. The way you settle the game is by penalties, and whoever wins the penalties is the winner of the match.
I know, all that it does is open up in my head the possibility for some incredible conflicts, like what happens in a two-legged tie, where you lose the second leg, but that makes the overall score level, and you kind of go through extra time, and then you win on penalties. You've won a game that you've actually lost.
Yeah, but then
you've won the overall tie.
There's no perfect answer. This is why there's a dispute about it. But like, it's more common that 90-minute games are won on penalties, surely, than two-legged, or at least more important, because the other side, and I think this is what City said in that meeting. You know, what are you going to do? You're going to take World Cups off people who have won on penalties?
No, because like it's really simple. The World Cup final was a draw, and you have to decide.
But nobody says they won a draw. Nobody says the final was a...
But you have to decide who's going to lift the trophy, and so the tie was won on penalties, but the match was drawn.
Yeah, maybe.
That's where I stand, and I feel very, very strongly about this, and I'm sorry, City, but I don't agree with you on this one.
it's nice to actually see some City fans just not letting club allegiances come into it, and they do also say that, which is rarely the case in football for any clubs these days. So yeah, that's nice. But yeah, not always the case.
Yeah. The other bit of housekeeping to do, Sam, is I want to just before we get into the actual meat and drink of this week's show, I want to get into a little bit about Kevin De Bruyne. You wrote about this recently, actually, about the idea that City are a better team without him. Yeah. Which, genuinely, if you had offered that opinion to me at any point during Kevin De Bruyne's City career, I would honestly have been thinking about calling the doctors. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I'm not really having it either. I thought when I wrote the article at the end of last week and on Saturday, I was like, I hope people don't just think, no, next. And obviously some people do. And kind of I do as well, really. But obviously I've got kind of put the arguments forward. But it does seem that there are plenty of people who are willing to have the debate, at least. Obviously most people take it for what it is and realise that the most important thing is whether one plays or the other, City carry on winning. You know, well, if as long as everyone else is stable and there's not loads of problems all over the pitch like last season, you know, like we saw in 2018-19 and as we're seeing now, it doesn't really matter. But yeah, it's an interesting one. I still don't think they are better without him. I think one of the issues is that people seem to think or have got this idea in their minds, and not everyone who suggests this, but some people who suggest they're better without him seem to think that he just goes clattering around the pitch, giving the ball away left, right and centre, and putting City under a load of problems. And as far as I could tell, so there's loads of stats and stuff in the article, but I also went on Y Scout, which is like a scouting platform, and I looked at a playlist of every shot the City have conceded in this run, and every counter-attack the opposition have had. And I looked to see who'd given the ball away. And there was a couple where De Bruyne had played a pass and it didn't work and the other team went and counter-attacked. But there was also a couple when Bernardo was trying to dribble and he got tackled. So it's there's no difference there.
It swings and roundabouts.
Yeah, and also, like, it didn't happen enough for it to be a problem for either of them. Like, you're always going to do that.
Did most of De Bruyne's happen on Saturday?
well, yeah, I was looking before the game. But, I mean, I didn't take Saturday's game into account. Because, and this is the thing, you know what I was saying before? It feels like people are thinking, well, he's just giving the ball away left, right and centre and everyone else is playing crap. That's kind of the argument for some people, or at least it feels like that's the argument for me. But that is what happened on Saturday. But obviously, he was a bit rusty, that's why he was giving the ball away. And everyone else was playing crap because everyone else was rusty. The dynamic of the team, you know, you can't blame De Bruyne for the fact that others were off their game as well. Yeah. Like, it was, I think Guardiola took a big risk, and to touch on that point and the game quickly, I think Guardiola took a big risk thinking, well, I'm going to rest, God, Cancelo, Rodri, Bernardo, Foden,
Sterling.
And Sterling.
Yeah.
So that's five big players there. And he goes, and I'm going to give minutes to people who need minutes, like Fernandinho. Obviously, Walker doesn't really need the minutes, but it's good to get Walker involved.
Aguero started.
Obviously, Aguero, Torres and De Bruyne, and those three really need the minutes. So by the end of the game, you've got five players who are rested and three or four plus Walker who didn't need the minutes but had the game time who are in a better position in terms of match fitness, and City won. It's like, we don't need to dwell on the game too much. We know why they didn't play particularly well. We know why, look, there's the XG stats floating around about how West Ham had more XG and, oh, isn't that unusual? And yeah, it is. But it's not like City played their first choice 11 or what we would consider one of their best 11s and struggled and we could go, oh, what's this? What's this? What's going on? Are they tired? It doesn't need any more analysis other than the team was very different. And at the end of it, City still won. And like, most people are better off for either having the game time or not having the game time. And that's why I didn't include anything that De Bruyne did in that game in the article.
Yeah.
In the same kind of way, I didn't really include anything that Bernardo did against Everton because I just felt without Gundogan, it was too much of a... There were too many variables in that game. Gundogan didn't play. Obviously, Laporte and Walker were back in. The balance was a bit off. So what I tried to do was just keep it... It's a small sample, but just keep it to games in this run where everyone else was basically more or less doing the same kind of thing. Cancelo was getting forward, Gundogan was getting forward. I mean, the front three changed all the time. You couldn't really find any consistency there. But yeah, I just wanted to kind of see how the team performs overall and what the other players do, like Cancelo and Gundogan, when they're in the team. I mean, I haven't really got towards my conclusions, and obviously you can read the article for that. But I thought one interesting thing, just as an example to talk about, whether you've read the article or not, is Cancelo seemed to be getting forward a bit more. He was playing a bit more in that kind of right-hand half space, if you will, the number eight position, a bit more without De Bruyne. And he obviously, well, actually, he created less, which was quite interesting, without De Bruyne. But maybe that's because City played harder games. But his role was slightly different. But Gundogan's was pretty much the same. And this is interesting, and it goes to show that it can't just be put down to whether De Bruyne is playing or not.
Yeah.
Like, so the most obvious thing for me when people were asking this on the Q&As and on Twitter was, well, De Bruyne played at the start of this run, and Gundogan was scoring. You know, Gundogan scored against West Brom before the run even happened, when he was getting further forward. Cancelo was playing further forward with De Bruyne, and City were winning games. So that was my stock answer. But yeah, I looked, and Gundogan's role is basically the same. He gets the ball almost exactly the same. He's in almost exactly the same areas. He's still getting into the box. So his role hasn't changed. The interesting thing is he's performed much better with Bernardo in the team. He scored more goals, and I've got maps in the article of, like, showing that he's had better chances to score. But he's been in the box, he's had shots in the box at the same rate, but he's done better with Bernardo. So I think maybe people are also conflating the fact that, and I might be wrong here, but I think people might be conflating the fact that because he'd scored more goals with Bernardo, he's better without De Bruyne. But he was having just the same amount of touches input in the box, shots, yeah, in the box with De Bruyne. So I'm not sure if you can really, in inverted commas, blame De Bruyne for his decreased output while he was playing with De Bruyne. And also, I looked at all the chances he was having, Gundogan, and they were mainly created on the left. There was only one. There was one against Brighton where De Bruyne put a corner in and Gundogan met it at the near post, kind of swung a leg at it and it missed. And it's like, okay, that's a bit of a low XG chance. It's because of De Bruyne. Maybe you could do that. Maybe you could say, okay, well, he's giving him chances, he can't score. But that was the only one. And the other one he had was Bernardo had a shot that was blocked and it rebounded at Chelsea, and Gundogan had a shot from the edge of the box and that was blocked as well, I think. And that was the only shots that those two players had a direct impact on. So I don't think you can kind of blame De Bruyne for the fact that Gundogan actually scored more goals and had better chances when he was out of the team. The only thing I'd add to that, and I know I've talked for about an hour, is perhaps my understanding of football, and perhaps the people who explained Pauza to me in the summer, which has obviously become so important, maybe they could say, well, look, Gundogan is actually having better chances because the team are more stable, because they can advance as a unit, he can get into better positions. Maybe that, but I mean, the way I see the game, like in terms of my capabilities of analysing football and the way I analysed it with the stats and the watching back on Y Scout, I don't think you can blame De Bruyne for the fact that Gundogan didn't score as many when he was playing. It just seems like one of those things that's put down to other factors. And what I would say is, just because he didn't score as many with De Bruyne, don't think that De Bruyne kind of makes Gundogan play in his shadow.
Yeah, but it's a little bit of a 2+2=5 situation. Though,
I think so. And I accept I might be wrong. And I accept that, you know, if they were to do another Amazon documentary and Guardiola was having this discussion and he was saying, I don't think Gundogan plays as well with Kev, you know, then I would be like, oh, right, shit, I was wrong. But the way I see things, that's how I see it. But I'm not going to fight the point. And if anybody has got a good point to make other than that, then I'm willing to hear it. But it's an interesting debate, basically. Like, I'm glad there was more interest in it than I thought. I thought people would just say, this is stupid, why are you doing this? But it does seem like there's been a lot of engagement with it, and people are kind of happy to have that conversation. And also take it in the spirit it's intended. You know, no, I don't think anybody's saying, even people who do think that City are better with Bernardo in midfield, everybody acknowledges that it's just two great options. And yeah, that's the bottom line, really.
Yeah, it's not a, oh, De Bruyne, shit, get rid of him sort of situation. Yeah, exactly, it's none of that, yeah. Well, if you want to have a read of that, you can sign up Man City Pod. Just use that code and you can get yourself a 40% discount for the next 6 months.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Let's move on to the actual kind of the real meat of this week's show, yeah. Sam, because the idea for this week's show started with this from Guardiola after the win over Borussia Mönchengladbach.
We have a lot of money to buy a lot of incredible players.
Now, short and sweet, and it's some absolute prime Guardiola sarcasm, that, isn't it? He was asked about why City have been so dominant and why they've been able to put on these sorts of performances. But in the run up to the game with West Ham, Guardiola was asked more about his role as a coach, about his input in the entire kind of operation recently. And I wouldn't normally include the question at the start of this, but I think the question's key to kind of get it into how he answers it. And so this is what he said.
Yeah, you keep on saying that it's all about spending the most money and having the best players for success. I mean, do you really mean that? Does the manager make no difference? I mean, for instance, could I manage Manchester City to sort of 100 points and consecutive Premier League titles?
No, because you will not play with fullbacks inside.
So there you go.
Yeah, you will play wide.
But you're of course,
James, of course I give credit to myself. You know, for the way we play belongs to us. Yeah, definitely. And be energetic and be, guys, it's not enough, we can do better, and next one, and for a long time, because the credit we give us, all of us is sustained this for a long time, the period, you know. I'm the proud for the fact when one team win the Premier League, the second season struggle a lot, we make back-to-back, and the third season we could not fight against Liverpool. It was incredible, we were second. Today, this season again, we are there. This is when I am proud the most. 4 Carabao finals. This is one I'm proud the most. And this, of course, we credit ourselves. But to do this, you need good talents. You need top players. And top players cost money. But honestly, I want to finish that. So I think United spend money too, and Chelsea spend money too, and Barcelona spend a lot. And Barcelona spend a lot, and Madrid spend, and every all the clubs, you know, in the position.
So the difference is the manager. Then, if all these big clubs spend, you know, equal roughly amounts of money, it's the manager.
You
the
are not You are not convincing me. The difference are the players. Okay. No.
Where did you get this idea from?
Come from if you listen the history from football, there are a writer named Martí Perarnau write a book lately about the history of the football, and maybe in 1516 the people play with the fullback inside. So I didn't invent anything. I just the way I do it, because I'm playing like this, but sometimes I'm going to play in a different way. So it's not about this. I would tell you, if I would believe the reason why it's me, I would tell you. I would be grateful to tell you the reason why this success is because I'm so handsome, and this is the reason why. It's not like this. Are the players in all the big clubs had incredible success, put all the teams in South America, in Europe, the big clubs is due the quality of the players, the mentality. And I would say the manager can seduce them to have this mentality a little bit, but the organization itself too. Our chairman don't want one day a sleep, don't want to rest. He pushed me. Like I had to push my CEO, and CEO pushed me and Chiki, and we push each other to be better and better. And still, when I had the feeling, when we finished the game against Gladbach, I had the feeling maybe will not be enough to reach the last stage for the Champions League if we don't improve some department. This is the only way to get him better. If I would not feel we can do it better, I would not have extended my contract here, 100%. If I extend the contract, it's because they convince me for different issues, but the team is still, we can do better. If don't, the team will be over. When I came here to play or win in England, we have done already. Well, I did it. So I came to play in a special way in England. I did it. The job is done. But I still had the feeling we can do better. I still can do it. We win more and make our fans proud that we can do it. Enjoy ourselves. We can do it. And this is important. For a short time, again, James, for a short time, we can do it without top players. You can do it. Half season, one season, you can do it. Sustain for a long time, incredible, hard, tough organization that support a lot the manager, like the journalism, the journalists and the players know he will not be sacked. This is so important. And after top quality players. I never, in my 12 years as a manager, never, ever scored a goal. Never. Never. And never save a penalty. Never. So, the artists are the players. Only we can do is help them. Knowing that doing the same, you can lose. Because sometimes the people forget the opponents are good too. So, I think the message was so clear.
That honestly, it's like there's great, goosebumps, isn't there, in moments in that?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, and this is why I tweeted afterwards. I was like, amazing press conference, and I'm aware that any kind of, I don't know, teasing something on Twitter and people are automatically thinking, oh God. And then all of a sudden the responsibility is on me then. It's like, you said it was amazing. But I knew people would love it. Like we'd already had, so I asked Guardiola a question earlier on in the press conference about the difference between Bernardo and De Bruyne playing in midfield. And I thought it might be one of those where it's just like, they're both great players, piss off, mate, kind of thing. But he gave a really good answer. And Jack Gorn at the Mail asked him a question, and he got a good answer. And when Pep was speaking to Jamie Jackson there, I messaged Jack and John Smith at Goal, who covers City. And I was like, this is really good. And then by the end, I was like, that's just fantastic. And I just knew fans would love it. I knew exactly what the reaction would be. I knew fans would think this guy's great. The way he talked about the club pushing him and the interaction with, you know, the chairman and Cheeky and Ferran, and just the way he is with the little jokes, even the fact that, you know, when he goes super honest, and he would never have admitted, I don't think, after the Gladbach game, that he didn't think they could go all the way. But, you know, when he's in his full flow, he'll let some stuff go. It was classic kind of Guardiola press conference stuff, really. And like, in the best way, like, it was brilliant. I knew exactly how it would be received. And yeah, it was fantastic, and it was great to hear it all again then, even though I edited the videos and I listened to it about five or six times.
It's interesting as well to hear him talk about and almost like the reaction to that slump that they were having last season and the start of this season, because like a few months ago we were talking about, you know, actually wanting to see hard evidence of why he should get that contract extension and you know what had changed in how City were playing, in what he was doing in order to get City out of that slump, and how he was going to take the team forward from where he'd taken them to that point. And, you know, ever since then, in fairness to him, you know, that Spurs game aside, he has shown us what we wanted to see. It's interesting to hear him say that's what he expected of himself as well, and that he feels he can do better, even given what he's achieved in, what, the Centurion season, 18-19, with all the cups that they won. It's just interesting to get that insight into how he's thinking about it all.
Yeah, and I mean, the easy conclusion to draw there, I suppose, is the fact that, I mean, if I'm thinking what more could they do, I think the obvious answer is the Champions League. And he's probably an element of that. But I'm sure, if knowing how Guardiola thinks and how he prepares and how detailed and how granular everything is, I mean, he's probably talking about much more specific details than we could never really comprehend with our kind of understanding of football. And like a couple of years ago, he mentioned how, even when they were, you know, on the way to winning 100 points, I think it was that first title season, and he was like, I want them to be able to understand this, solve problems on the pitch for themselves kind of thing. You know, if they need to be able to notice something the opposition are doing and do that and fix it for themselves. I think they have got to that stage. Probably something to ask him at some point soon, especially if they keep winning. It's like, how many different ways can you ask? You're playing well, aren't you?
Yeah.
So I might ask him about that soon. But there's probably some element of that to it. But yeah, it does feel like the obvious one, and probably the big one, is do better in the Champions League, isn't it? It has to be. And I'm sure he probably thinks, we've done so well. We've been so good. And like, even last season when, you know, I didn't really have a major problem with City last season. My major problems were more at the start of this season when I was like, God, things are getting worse. Last season, I was like, it's not that bad. Like, they're still second. They score loads of goals. They keep a load of clean sheets. If they just make a couple of tweaks, they'll be really good again. So I wasn't that fussed last season with how it had gone. I thought, okay, there's no big bust-ups. There's no major issues behind the scene. There's just a couple of injuries. Things aren't working that well. And okay, here we go. And I'm sure Guardiola was probably thinking the same. And obviously the way they beat Madrid at home, obviously away, but at home in August, and then went to Lyon, he must just be thinking, we're so much better than this.
Yeah.
Like, why does it keep happening? And it's like, whether they're bad or unlucky or whatever, something, like, and often it's both, isn't it?
But I just remember chatting to you at the start of this season about how boring they'd got. Like,
yeah, from
a team that was so entertaining going forward suddenly just become so dull to watch. To the point where, you know, we were saying, well, this is taking 90 minutes out of my day to watch this.
Yeah, I know.
And like the transformation's just been incredible. I mean, this weekend, we discussed the Opta issue before, but officially this weekend he made it to 200 wins as City boss. Only one other person has ever done that, and that was Les McDowell back in 1961. He made 220 wins in total as City manager, but he managed for like 13 years. It took him 12 years and 530 games to get to that 200 landmark. Guardiola's done it in 257 games quicker. He's nearly done it in nearly half the time.
Well, he's incredible, isn't he? Like, and I know this is the point where, I mean, it's almost for balance. I think I've seen a lot of stuff about City in the media over the weekend in particular, and people don't like it when the money's brought up. I just feel like people in the media need to mention, for obviously there's probably not many non-City fans listening to this, but I feel like you do need to mention, well, obviously they've got really good players, which, to be fair, that's what we're talking about, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because Guardiola keeps saying we've got really good players. But in fact, I'm going to go off on a tangent here, but I think I might be able to bring it back around.
Might be the tangent that I want to go off a bit later on, so okay. maybe we're all right on this.
Well, I don't know. When I said earlier, I knew exactly what the reaction would be. I didn't expect a couple of people to be like, Jamie Jackson was obviously just trying to get him to say he's the best, and then he could write something like, I deserve all the credit, says arrogant Guardiola or whatever. Like, I don't see that at all. And if I had to ask a question, or if I wanted to ask a question on the it's all about the players thing. So he said that he said it's all about the players for so long now, and so sarcastically, it just washes over me. But somebody made the point before the West Ham game the other day, we were talking, and they were like, obviously with City fans in the media, it doesn't help that the main headline-grabbing thing that a manager says after games is, it's all because we've got loads of money. Like, it doesn't help that that's inevitably going to be in the media. Obviously, people should realise it's sarcastic, but it's not helpful. So my point of view, if I was asking Pep about that, but obviously I just go, well, he's just being sarcastic, fine. I didn't think we needed to ask again. But if I had to ask, I would have asked what Jamie did. And that's why I think he did really well, because I would have said, look, Pep, I know you're saying you have got good players, and you have, obviously, but like, give yourself some credit. Like, do yourself a favour. Kind of do the fans a favour a bit so they don't have to hear about money again. But just do yourself a favour. And like you must realise that you can't just put any old dickhead in charge of this team and they're going to get 200 wins, which is exactly what Jamie said. He was like, not any old dickhead, really. I'm not that old calling Jamie. But like, he was like, could I manage this team? And Guardiola was like, well, no, obviously. And straight away he did say, look, the style is ours, didn't he? He was like, this is our style and we're proud of that. And he's never going to take the credit, is he? But then the beauty of it was, the more Jamie was asking, the more Guardiola was making points that I don't think I would have considered, and maybe other fans wouldn't have considered. So when he talked about the chairman always pushes me, and you know, I push Cheeky, and like the pressure Cheeky's been under to get targets after they've missed out on like Frenkie de Jong, for example, probably Jorginho and then de Jong. So there was real pressure to get Rodri from Pep, and that, and the way they all pushed each other. The more he talked and the more Jamie asked, the more good points were brought up. So
It's about pushing those buttons, isn't it? To get those responses.
But that tangent being, I don't have any problems with the question that was asked or the way it was asked. Like, I feel it's only fair to be like, come on, Pep, like, you are clearly amazing. Like, do you not acknowledge that? And obviously the beauty of Pep's answer was he did acknowledge that, but he also gave loads of other reasons as well. And it was just fantastic. And yeah, it was a tangent that was related to something we were talking about. I can't now remember what we were talking about, but yeah, I think it's covered something nicely. If you can bring it back, then please.
It's all right, because I'm going to skillfully mold this show into a new direction based on how we're going to talk, because I was going to bring up the money thing a bit later on. Yeah. But we'll do it now, so it just all kind of fits in. But because City fans have been getting upset lately about the way that the club's money and spending is always seems to be mentioned. Like, you'd only need to go on Twitter when, I don't know, match of the day or something is on showing the highlights, or when the coverage is on, and like, all it takes is the commentator to say City's bench is worth X amount of hundreds of millions of pounds, and there are tweets after tweets after tweets about it getting tiresome. And I kind of want to address it, because it obviously doesn't exist in isolation, this great City side. It's not simply because of Guardiola, because without the money that City spent, Guardiola wouldn't be here, let alone getting a tune out of this team like he is. And like you say, this isn't a job that's been done solely because City have bought good players, because you can't just stick any old, like you say, dickhead in the role and get the tune that Guardiola was getting out of them. Otherwise, you know, Mark Hughes, Roberto Mancini, Manuel Pellegrini would have got 100 points and just said to them, you know, go out, play how you want to, play however you play, because you're all fantastic, and they'd have won game after game after game, and it just doesn't happen. And they obviously had access to the same resources. But again, it's not... Like this hasn't happened in isolation. The money is an important context in this, and I suppose it's about giving credit where credit's due, if that makes sense. It's not about oh, City have spent 500 billion gazillion pounds, therefore they are a great team. They've spent a lot of money. They've brought in good players, and they've brought in the best coach to get the best out of them.
Yeah. I also think it's a slightly different thing, because so I remember the point I was making was, it does feel like in the media, you obviously have to acknowledge the money spent, because you're just going to have fans of other clubs going, yeah, what about this, what about this? But that is exactly what you were just saying. Like, yeah, there are expensive players, there are good players in the team, but you can't do this without a genius manager like that. And as Guardiola said, without the whole organisation, to be fair, which is a whole other element to it, which only kind of speaks well for how City have run the sporting department. But I think it's slightly different in terms of the gripes with the media. It's just that it seems like the better the team does, the more relevant the money is. And maybe that's entirely fair. But like I saw a tweet from a United fan on Sunday after the game against Chelsea, and he was like, Chelsea spent 250 million quid in the summer and United are getting a stick for not doing better. And it's like, so it's also funny that there's the slight United agenda element to there as well. but it is like, nobody's mentioning how much the United players cost, but it's because they're not playing well. But then it should work both ways. Yeah. Like really, if you're going to bang the money drum the whole time when someone's doing really well, every time there's a crap game between United and Chelsea, or Chelsea lose or United lose, you know, United's form's terrible at the moment. It probably should be. If you're going to do it both ways, I'd rather people just shut up, to be honest, and analyse the actual reasons on the pitch. But if you're going to have it, yeah. Oh, by the way, City's bench cost this. It should be like, well, by the way, this is what he cost, and he's scored one goal in 8 games or whatever it is for whichever United player we're talking about at the time. You know, Pogba, Maguire, and obviously not so much goals for Maguire, but just different levels and like just how much the back line cost between them. You know, Shaw 30, Wan-Bissaka 50, Maguire obviously 80, Lindelof 30-odd, 40. Like, I'm not asked about that. But if we're going to run through everyone else's, and look, obviously I get the fact that United probably don't have a £50 million defenders all over the bench. But if we're talking about the quality of the individual players on the pitch and what they're producing, because let's not forget they're not playing football anywhere comparatively close to Manchester City by any measure. Nobody is. Now I think that's probably why that is why fans are a bit annoyed, more because it gets mentioned with City, and I think probably there's a place to mention it. Not every fucking game.
Not every game. That's it, isn't it?
It's every game, and it's the fact that, like, the mad thing is with Pogba, everyone talks about how he's not like very good when he's not playing well, but nobody ever says he was the world record fee. Like, it's like, what? Like, is that not how we're judging players? Like, is it not the first thing everybody says? Oh well, he cost this much, so you expecting I do think there's a bit of a double standard there. I mean, Christ, I do wish there'd be a bit of a day off with the media are out to get us. And I know that's probably not the most wise thing to say as somebody who works in the media to an audience of City fans. But like that table from Sky Sports over the weekend that was just called The Entertainers, and it was like Leeds, West Brom and Palace. But I mean, and like, loads of City fans were getting really annoyed about it. It's like, lads, it was just a light-hearted table about teams with, like, if you watch them, there's going to be goals in the game. Like, they're not saying they're a great team. They're not left out Man City to denigrate Man City. They're saying, if you watch Leeds, there's a good chance it's going to be a good game. Well, fuck me, it is. Like, I mean, to be fair, like, I wouldn't say, oh, West Brom are playing, I'll watch that. Whereas if it was Leeds, I would. But the fact that West Brom are on that table, it makes a good point. There's probably going to be goals in that game because they're not very competent defensively.
Yeah.
Like, but that was just a light-hearted thing. Like, it's not a big deal. Like the other thing, obviously that thing in the eye with the TV guide, yeah, it was a bit of a light-hearted joke, but I mean it was stupid. The guy's got a load of shit for it, and that is I can see more why City fans are annoyed about that. And obviously it gets filed away then in the media are out to get us part 2 million. But like the Sky Sports thing, it's like, lads, it's not all that serious. Like, not all of it. Like, this isn't, like, they're not talking about the money here. They're not talking about the owners. They're not even talking about Man City. Just fucking let it go. So, yeah.
I think the other...
He says, ironically, very angry about it.
While you're on your soapbox, let's just address the other line that gets a lot of criticism as well. I think Micah Richards was the latest one to fall into this trap. City have a big squad.
Micah Richards, he hates City, doesn't he?
So. Well, what I always think about this one is it's a semantic thing, because I think people fall into the trap of saying exactly big when they mean strong with depth.
Yeah, I think that's all it is.
Yeah, it's like City still have the 25-man squad that any other Premier League have. What is it? City have got, that's like 23-man squad this season or whatever.
I think 25, but...
Like City had a big squad in 1998. Like, they had 50-odd players on the books. That was that was big, but it just had no strength in it. What Micah Richards is saying is that City have got a squad that is strong on the bench and, you know, the starting 11, and you can kind of move players in and out.
Well, as we've seen, the whole De Bruyne-Bernardo debate. Yeah. How great is it for City that it doesn't matter if you haven't got the best player in the league in your team?
Just on kind of the moving back towards the credit and how Guardiola's perceived and all that sort of stuff. I think it's I want to say at the moment that as a fan, I'm really pleased that this season is going well for obvious reasons in that, you know, it looks like City are going to go on and win the title. But a little bit more so for Guardiola in that it felt like last season, it felt like the narrative was almost gathering pace that,
yes.
that he came, he conquered for a bit, but then it all fell apart and he can't do it in England.
Oh, he had two unprecedented, historically amazing seasons, but who's asked about that? Like, it was definitely going that way, wasn't it? It was definitely going to be, two seasons out of four, or two trophies. Hang on, how many seasons would have been the first one? Two titles, Liverpool, and then whatever this one would have been. So if it had left after five, two Premier Leagues out of five, not good enough. Yeah, they were good, but didn't sustain it. Is he that good? Not really.
Yeah,
that would have been it, wouldn't it?
And that's why I'm pleased that this season has turned out so far the way it has done. Because,
100%.
Because I mean, even at this stage, as a fan, I'm still not quite ready to say, yes, they've won the league and everything, because things happen. COVID's around, you know, like weird things happen. But, like, they're probably, like, they're on the cusp. They're so far ahead of the rest of the field now. And it's not only that, it's like he's had a season where he got 100 points, then he followed that up with 98 points, first back-to-back titles in a decade. Liverpool came along, tried to muscle in. They played, you know, their exciting brand of football with a they were a brilliant side under Klopp for, you know, 18-19 and were so, they pushed City all the way to that title, went on to win the Champions League. Last season they ran away with the league again. And so to come back and, you know, fight against that sort of opposition. And I know Liverpool haven't been great this season, but to come back and kind of have the mentality to go, right, okay, we dust ourselves down, we start again, and we're going to put in another extraordinary season after, you know, having that dip. I think that speaks volumes to kind of what Guardiola wants to achieve in England.
Yeah, it's that consistency, it's that relentlessness. And again, you know, like you said, previous managers have had access to the same kind of resources. And maybe this squad hasn't cost exactly the same, because obviously the market goes up and up, and it has done forever. So obviously City squad 5 years ago, well, 6 years ago, 7 years ago, 10, I suppose, with Mancini, didn't cost the same as it does now. But it still would have been, I don't know, for argument's sake, let's say it was the most expensive squad. And it's like when that journalist who likes Mourinho used to make the point, and it's like about how much City spend. It's like, you do know your mate was at Real Madrid with the most expensive squad ever and didn't win the Champions League, which is exactly the same. Like, it's the same kind of thing. Like, there'll always be an expensive squad in history at some point, but there's no way that they've put consistency together like this. And and like, to go back and like, yeah, that's the beauty of it. And again, like, I wouldn't have jumped in after Jamie's questions the other day and said, oh, by the way, Pep, I know you say you give yourself a bit of credit and you can push the mentality or whatever, but yeah, can you tell us a bit more about how you do it? Because, like, he made the points very well. But that is another thing I would say in his credit, like that consistency. And like I said, the second, this isn't me talking with hindsight. Like, I didn't think last season was that bad. You know, I talked about them not being clinical and, you know, maybe like the pressing problems and that. But whenever, I think the proof was when City beat Liverpool 4-0, I wrote the article before the game. And I said, I've written this article before the game because these are the changes City need to make. And I'm not going to be swayed by the fact that City have battered Liverpool or been battered by Liverpool. This is the situation. They're quite good. They need a couple of changes. They'll be all right. So a second, as we've seen again with Liverpool this season and all the previous champions before that, particularly, you know, like Leicester and Chelsea, who completely fell apart. Like, a second isn't that bad. If you're wedging a second in between three title wins, that's huge. But yeah, just the way that... in terms of you saying you kind of pleased for him, I remember, I suppose, because I know you did that bad take amnesty on the Blue Moon podcast that you also host.
Yeah.
Obviously, I would have had some. I think I wrote a couple of things when Ruben Dias was signed. I think probably the thing I said the most was, it doesn't matter how good he is as a defender because he can't sort this mess out. to be fair, they have obviously tweaked the team and they are more solid, so there aren't problems with counterattacks. But he has galvanised the team in a way that I didn't foresee. So that's a bad take. But I suppose the other one was, I did, now I'm plugging other podcasts left, right and centre, but I did the 93-20 podcast when they did like the It was like an all-day pod-a-thon for the food banks.
Yeah.
It was just after Guardiola signed the contract. And I think my tone was, I was very kind of downbeat. I was like, Guardiola is the best man they could get. But just because he signed that contract, is not going to turn around straight away. And again, it didn't. They didn't turn around straight after the contract and win.
It's about 6 weeks, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. It was when Guardiola and everyone were like, right, we need to sort this out. So there was something there. But I was just like, I'm not really sure. Like, I still think he's the best man, and I think he can turn it around, but I've no idea how, and I don't know when. I don't know when it's coming. But the one thing I did say, and Aysan disagreed, but me and Jack were the same on this. So it was around the time there was more Messi articles kicking off. It was only a couple of months after they didn't get Messi. And there was, well, I think we'd been talking about some of the articles in the summer that were about, don't sign Messi. We want you to do it in your own way. Aysan and others obviously were making the point that he can sign whoever he wants. Like, it doesn't matter. But I was saying, I would like him to win the Champions League without Messi, just because, can you imagine? Like you were saying, the narrative was building that if he had have left after this season and not won the title, it would have been, oh yeah, well, he came and he did all right, but nothing special. Like, if he were to win the Champions League with Messi, he's not going to get any credit for it. And that's what we're talking about, isn't it, on this whole podcast?
Yeah.
Like, Aysan's point was, who gives a shit? They're not going to give him credit anyway. And I'm like, that is a good point. But I would like, just for him, just for Pep to be able to be like, yeah, won the Champions League. But I mean, to be fair, Aysan's point is right. Whether he wins it with Messi or not, if he wins it with City, it's going to be money. It's going to be owners. It's going to be...
There's always an excuse, isn't there?
There's always going to be an excuse. And Aysan's right, to be fair. Me and Jack were very much kind of... Like, obviously, on Guardiola's side, we want him to do well. And we want him to do well for him. So he can... Because obviously, Guardiola knows all this. He said Fraudiola once. He actually said the word Fraudiola. He knows what's going on. Like, he's been asked about whether whether he was lucky to have Xavi and Iniesta and Messi at Barca without any kind of acknowledgement that he might have actually made them into good players. Yeah. You know, he might have actually exacerbated their qualities and, you know, made those qualities more suitable. And yeah, he always
every time he's asked about the Champions League, it's like he always says, I'm just not a good manager.
Yeah,
and
he's like, well, obviously I was a failure at Munich because I didn't win the Champions League. So he knows that, and that's why, you know, me and Jack were like, we want him to do it. Like, it'd be great for him to do it for himself. But as Aysan says, like, who's asked? Like, the people aren't going to give him the credit anyway. Like, the amount of, if I'm having a go at stuff I've seen over the weekend, like, Liverpool fans, I saw like a Liverpool fan put together a compilation of like Ruben Dias mistakes. And there was only one when he was playing for City anyway. Like, what? Like, there was some with like fans in the stadium playing for Portugal and Benfica. Like, this was ages ago. Like, what is the matter with you? And obviously there's a tweet saying that, oh, Alexander-Arnold could do the Cancelo role better, and he is better anyway. And it's like, what are you doing? But I mean, the thing that I'm trying to tell myself, and I would advise other City fans, is I've already used the phrase "some dickhead." It's just one dickhead, isn't it? Like, it's just one mad fan from another club. And I mean, look, there isn't just one often, is there? There's often quite a few. But it's like, yeah, my advice to myself and others, like, just it should be much easier just to forget about it. Who cares? Who cares what these people are saying? Because it's just not, especially that level. You know, you might have like articles in the media that are a bit stupid, but like that level of, here's Ruben Dias making mistakes while he's playing for Benfica. It's like, your head's come off.
Well, let's just,
it doesn't matter.
On
we
that
shouldn't care, but
briefly, because obviously, like you say, there's different levels of it. Should City fans shouldn't be bothered by what other fans think, because like City's style of play and success and what Guardiola does with the team is for City fans. That's it. It's for nobody else.
Yeah, yeah.
Should City fans care what Gary Neville thinks on Sky Sports, what Jamie Carragher says on the Monday Night Football show, or what Steve McManaman says on BT Sport? Should City fans care about those people?
Well, it's this whole idea of caring I can't really get my head around, because you get all these fans going, oh, well, when United won the title, I hated it, and now obviously when Liverpool won it, it was great for me, but I just don't care about City. And it's like, Don't you?
Why does it make up 90% of your timeline for the last 24 hours?
It's just the old, I'm not bothered. Like, honestly, I couldn't care less. Like, obviously, like, there is an element to it, and yeah, like Gaz, I've met Gaz once, but like your mate Gaz burned his daydream on Twitter. He made a good point. He was like, I'm old enough to remember when people were slagging off United fans and they were using City as like the paragons of like authenticity. They were like, look, these City fans, they're proper fans from Manchester. United fans are nothing. These City fans are great. But obviously now it's City fans are shit. They're just glory supporters. They're apologists for a regime. Like, nobody cares about them. And it's just juvenile bullshit, innit? And we really shouldn't care. But it is, like, it just wind me up. It does wind, like, just this kind of nonsense does wind me up. So the whole caring element. But, like, but the thing is, you mentioned, like, Carragher and Neville. I mean, another tangent. I find it a bit mad how, like, Neville's just posting pictures of himself, like, drinking wine. Like, if I was... I mean, I know it's completely different. And I know, obviously, Neville played for United. But like, I would never dream of, like... I'm already kind of fighting a losing battle anyway to prove that I'm kind of level-headed and objective talking about City despite having grown up a United fan. But I would never kind of want to call that into question. So it's, I mean, and like Neville generally on Sky is really good with his analytics and so is Carragher. But like the way they like carry on Twitter is just like, you kind of forget all the good stuff, and just like this is just a kind of Man United Liverpool ding dong fest, which Sky do seem to really enjoy. And I suppose the most of the big six games this season have been crap, as we saw on Sunday. So it does feel like Sky just can't wait to get back to the studio, so the old United and Liverpool pundits can argue about something. Yeah. But one of the points I am making at the same time is I do think Neville and Carragher have been very good on City, and like I saw a tweet the other week. So after City beat Liverpool on Monday Night Football, they picked apart the City performance and why it was so good. But like next week when City beat Spurs, they focused on Spurs. And I was like, well, I know they're going to focus on Spurs because they do a tactical bit and they can't do the same things. Obviously, like the tactics were different, but they can't really focus on City 2 weeks in a row after two big wins, because I don't think they would do that even if Liverpool had a battered team on the Sunday and then the Saturday after, because... the talking points move on and you can't cover everyone. And obviously Spurs is a good talking point, what's going on with Mourinho. But I saw some City fans are annoyed about that. And it's like, oh, you know, they're not talking about how great City were. They're talking about how great Spurs are, how bad Spurs are. And it's like, yeah, but they talked about how great City were last week against Liverpool. And it's just, yeah, there's a whole thing at the minute where I do think everybody wants, not everybody, but there's definitely a point to where everyone wants to think, oh, they're out to get us and they don't give us credit. But I don't know what kind of credit people want. And this is something I have to kind of wrestle with. So there was obviously a prominent Twitter City account which kind of likes to highlight these things. But the one article of mine that he always used to say was really good was an article I wrote about Raheem Sterling last summer. But that was because I was a bit critical of the media, of how he was treated, and Liverpool. And it's like, is that what people are expecting? Is that what people want me to write every week? Like in every article, do I have to make a snide point about something else or call out people in the media? Like that's not what I want to get into. It's not really the media climate that I enjoy. I don't like it when people do it about City. But my way of kind of combating that, and people say like, oh, you know, there's writers for United and Liverpool, and you know they have shot at City or whatever. And it's almost like some people definitely, like whether it's for us, The Athletic, or whether it's for the MEN or whatever, they want City fans in the media to have a go at the other clubs. But like, and I can understand that, but my personal way of dealing with that is I don't want to become part of the problem. I just want to do things in my own way. I want to kind of be level-headed and objective. And whether I'm talking about United or Liverpool, I don't want it to be all snidey and stuff like that. I think, you know, it's the old cliche and it's a bit corny, but it's kind of the kind of be the change you want to see in the world kind of thing. I don't know what would be solved by
Sam, that's a bit live, laugh, love, that, I'm afraid.
I know it is, but it is true. Like, I can't, like, I'm not going to, I mean, maybe people do want this more from City correspondents in general or from prospective City correspondents, but I don't think that's, like, the way this is going, the way Twitter's going, the way the media's going, we don't need more fuel thrown on the fire. You know, we need more people to fucking chill out and step back. That's what we need. And if I'm going to preach that, I can't do any different.
Yeah.
And I feel bad. Like, like when so when Klopp said City had 2 weeks break, my reaction was, great, this is exactly what this rivalry needs, just more shite to argue about. And it's just incessant. But I feel bad because I will have tweeted in the past, taking the piss out of Liverpool. And I remember the night when they'd lost, I think, at Arsenal at the end of last season, and they couldn't get 100 points. Like, I probably enjoyed that a bit too much on Twitter. But like overall, like the amount of opportunities there are, if you wanted to have a go at Liverpool or highlight, or this fan said something stupid, I could hit back with this. It's just, the world needs less of that, genuinely. Like, I know this is kind of serious now, but that's not the direction this should be going. Otherwise, you get more media catering towards that. You get less people on who know what they're talking about. You get more people on who are controversial. And then, like, where are we going to be in 5-10 years? Like, it's just going to be awful. Like, you're not going to, yeah, and like, and City fans will only hate that even more, because if you think Guardiola's not getting credit now, imagine in 10 years if City build on, imagine City get the next manager right and keep winning, and how difficult that is to replace somebody like Guardiola, as we've seen at other clubs, Arsenal and United, just in this country, you know, to get somebody else to take that on and then keep winning. But imagine them doing that, having spent more money, having, you know, won maybe 3 titles in a row with different managers, maybe won a couple of Champions Leagues. The credit you're going to get, if this is the climate, it's just less and less. Because you're not listening to people who say, actually, this is really difficult. You listen to people who say, oh, well, they've spent loads of money. Or you've listened to Liverpool fans or United fans who say, oh, I don't care. Like, this doesn't mean anything to me. And yeah, City fans will only get more wound up about that. And kind of rightly so, because that's all you're going to get. So it's just, you need to step back from it a bit, really. Like, and I'm talking about myself there, really. I mean, people can live it how they want, because I do appreciate it's frustrating. And as you can tell by my voice and my tone throughout this, I've been as frustrated as City fans. I've been frustrated with City fans. There's different elements to it. But
yeah
it's a mad thing, really, the whole credit and caring.
Well, let's finish on this one question then, Sam, because we've kind of come full circle on the does Guardiola get credit thing. Will he ever get the credit that he deserves for what he's achieved with this team?
Well, again, it's like, who are you going to for that? Like, I'll give him it. I mean, just because we've been saying specific examples, I think Jack and John will give him it. You know, Paul Hurst has always does great stuff in the Times on City, particularly, you know, at the end of the season, that kind of end of the season, how they did it article. You'll get that. Another element that I don't want to go into too much is just how much football moves on so quickly. Like, you spent so much time, you know, around 100 points in that conversation of, are City one of the best teams? Then it's like, oh, well, it depends what they do next season. But then next season, it's just like, oh, well, yeah, but they didn't win the Champions League, or blah, blah, blah. And all of a sudden, the next season is Liverpool winning it, and it's gone. And you're talking about old glories, and you're trying to get back to them. Like, the credit you get at the time, like, Sky will do a great thing on how City won the title, I'm sure of it. They will do great coverage. I'm sure Neville and Carragher will have a really good debate about it. Micah Richards will talk about their big squad and say how good they are.
And laugh his way through it.
Yeah, exactly. And like, there will be that. Like, that will be there. But I mean, and I'm not, this isn't kind of some rhetorical, snidey question. Like, what are people expecting? Because like, if another newspaper does, well, you know, City have done this, but it only throws questions about the ownership again. Like, does that cancel out the good stuff? So it's like, will there be credit? There will be loads of credit.
It just depends where you look.
Does it have to be blanket? How much do you want? Where do you want it to come from? Are you listening to other fans? And I'll include myself in this. Like, are you going to get wound up about other fans saying it doesn't matter, or it does matter, or our players are better, or we were unlucky? Like, are you going to let that kind of collide with all the media stuff that you do like, that you don't like? And how long do you want the credit to go on for? Because the season will come and go. We'll be talking about transfers. We'll be talking about Messi. We'll be talking about Haaland. And then next season will start. And all of a sudden, that window for credit is gone, because there's more stuff to talk about. So it's kind of enjoy it. And that's like, while it's happening now, like you say, you're still not at that level where you're comfortable with saying it's going to happen. But honestly, like, enjoy it now. Because it's happening. Like, 20 wins in a row, it's happening. And like, maybe they will go out of the Champions League, and maybe you'll feel down about it then, and the world will put the boot in then, because that's just how it works. Just, you've got to take your moments to enjoy it. Like, obviously, in the past, in like Pellegrini and Mancini time, City won the title on the last day. So you've got the time then, at the time just to enjoy it, and it kicks off. Before that, you can't enjoy it. Before that, it's nervous, and like you don't look back. I still remember the title running in 18-19. There was no time to enjoy that. I remember speaking to someone at City and just being like, people are saying future. Oh, wasn't it fun? It was not fun, was it?
No, it was not fun.
It was fucking hot. It was horrible. It was so nervous. It was so tense. Liverpool generally played first. They generally like seemed to get a win. Either, you know, they didn't play well and they got a win, or a late goal, or they got VAR help, or whatever it was then. Like, no VAR help, whatever it was. Like, it just seemed like, oh, it was so tense. It was horrible. But now, it almost couldn't be easier. And look, City aren't going to win every game between now and the end of the season. We'll talk about, oh, why didn't they do this? Why didn't they do that in a certain game? Or are they tired? Are they this? It's just enjoy it now. And like, yeah. Are they going to get credit? Like, I don't know. Like, it would be nicer. But also, yeah, I mean, it's too much of a tangent to go into Liverpool last season. But like, the thing with Liverpool was, and like, this is the same thing for when people say, oh, everyone cared about Liverpool last season, but they don't care about City now. It's like, well, the whole thing about Liverpool, no matter your perspective on it, whether you hate them or love them, it was a big story last season because they hadn't done it in 30 years. And to give them their due, up until February, they barely dropped a point. And it was outrageous. And it looked like, and they didn't in the end, but it looked like they were going to smash City's records. It looked like they were going to get about 110 points. It just so happened that before the pandemic even started, the wheels fell off relatively, and they didn't get that cohesiveness back afterwards either, because of, you know, pandemic football or whatever. But the story was Liverpool winning the title. And if people talk about, like, not diminished, but Liverpool won't be able to enjoy that as much as they would, because there was bigger concerns in the world. When they lifted the trophy, Liverpool fans were able to enjoy that, but the world was talking about the virus and lifting lockdown. There were bigger things going on. So I'm sure they probably feel they didn't get a chance, or not even a fair crack of the whip, because there was a lot of stuff in the media, obviously, a lot of stuff. But it was a big story, so there was going to be. But they didn't kind of get their time to enjoy it either. And also that very humorous thing from a City point of view, which is probably a good thing to end on. Our mate who says, and he was saying this before it was a possibility, but Liverpool obviously haven't had their parade yet. Or are they going to have one? And he was like, the best situation will be City winning the title and loaning Liverpool the title back for their parade, which, I mean, it's that might happen. The only thing that's not going to happen there is Liverpool won't have a parade. So my point being, you never know what's going to happen. Enjoy it while it's going on. City are miles out in front. Even if they drop a few points, United and Leicester are going to drop more. Enjoy it now. Enjoy it when the title's done. And look, if there's articles saying about money or sports washing or Guardiola not being that good, they'll annoy me as well. But like, life's too short, isn't it? Life is too short to worry about what other people are saying. And yeah, it would be nice to get a fairer crack of the whip. But I don't know. Maybe it is a fair crack of the whip as well, because maybe you also get that with other clubs. But
I'll tell you where City and Guardiola will get the credit that they deserve, and that's on Why Always Us every week.
Yeah.
Because we do. We bang the drum.
And like I said at the start, he was like, he's great, any Guardiola. And this stuff, I knew people would love it. And I knew people who aren't City fans but love Guardiola, I knew they would love it. But at the same time, like, when he says stuff that's a bit mad, we talk about that as well, because we're objective. But objectively, Guardiola is fantastic, who does some mad things, sometimes on the football pitch, sometimes in the press conferences. All you can do is give credit where it's due, basically. And there we go.
I'm thinking of this to anybody who is a younger listener. They will have no idea what this is. Possibly even American listeners as well. But you made me think of a line to finish on from Red Dwarf, which was very simply Holly the computer saying, "Appreciate what you've got, because basically I'm fantastic." And that's Guardiola all over.
That's very good. I wonder where you're going with that, but that's very good. Yeah, nice work. And we've talked, haven't we, here? So let's call it a day.
Yeah. That's it for this week's Why Always Us. I'm David Mooney. Thanks, as ever, to Sam Lee.
Yeah, cheers, mate. And thanks, everyone, for listening.
You can sign up to The Athletic right now for $3.99 a month, and you'll get that for 6 months with the code MANCITYPOD.
The Athletic.